The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio with husband and wife vintners Roger and Donna Beery. If you've ever been interested in starting your own winery or just learning a little more about wine and what goes on behind the bottle, stay tuned for the next hour. Now, here are Roger and Donna.
Welcome to this episode of Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio. We are very excited today. Our guest is John Jordan of the famous Jordan Winery in Northern Sonoma. It's hard to go into a restaurant and not see Jordan Cabernet or Jordan Chardonnay or both, and in your local wine shop as well. These are really extraordinary wines, and this winery has a fantastic history, and we're going to explore all of that with John today. So on that note, Donna, what's in your glass?
Well, of course, in my glass is a 2011 Jordan Chardonnay in honor of John being on the show, not to mention that it's also one of my favorite Chardonnays. Anyway, but I can't wait for the show when I'll be drinking some J. Cage cellar wine. How's that coming, honey?
Well, the J. Cage, which as those of you that listen know, that's our label that we started this year. It was real exciting. We were back in Sonoma last weekend and got to taste those wines that have now been in barrel for about a month. And we're really excited about the Sauvignon Blanc. We're really excited about the Viognier. Those are going to be lovely, crisp summer wines. But I have to tell you, I had a pretty emotional experience, Donna, when you were there, when I barrel sampled a blend of our five barrels of Pinot Noir. And those of you that have seen the movie Bottle Shock, you may remember the scene where Gustavo is sitting on the front porch with the older gentleman,
Mr. Garcia,
yes, and he shares his Cabernet, and you see the emotion. I kind of felt the same way. So these are young children. The wines aren't anywhere near ready, but I have to say I'm really excited. If you want to know more, please go to our BacchusandBeery.com blog page, BacchusandBeery.com, or you can just Google me, Roger Beery. We'll have the J.K. Sellers website up before long. But we're also really excited. We got our shipment of Giordano wines from Italy this week. Our friends at Giordano, we've talked about before, just some fantastic wines at great values. And we encourage you to check them out at theitalianwineclub.com, theitalianwineclub.com. So we're going to tackle some news and some pretty weird news. And one bit of news that is not weird is you may recall a few weeks ago we had our friend Jean Hoflinger, the winemaker for Alpha Omega, on. He was a fantastic guest. Well, the famed Robert Parker this week issued this round of wine ratings, and Jean, his wines at Alpha Omega and some of the wines he makes for other people, just knocked it out of the park. He had 12 wines that scored 95 or higher. He had another 12 wines that scored between 90 and 94. And then to top it all off, he got his first 100, or in Robert Parker's world, a perfect score for his wine, The Debate, from the famed Tokalon Vineyard in Napa. So I just want to give my friend John a pat on the back for these fine wines. Alpha Omega wines are fantastic, especially those of you that love big, monstrous caps. And John is a fantastic guy, and he deserves all the accolades.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about some wine in the news. It's been an interesting week for some wine stories, and so we thought we'd tackle a few of those. One of the ones that made it around the the wine circuit was a story about an incident at the Bobby Flay Steakhouse at the Borgata in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And so as the story goes, there's a group of 10 diners being hosted by one of the diners. Supposedly nobody knows a lot about wine. The waitress comes up and asks about ordering wine, and only three or four of the group of 10 is going to partake in the wine, and the host defers to one of the other diners and said, you know, why don't you order? And apparently the diner looks at the menu, he doesn't have his glasses on, I can relate to that, and says, well, what's your best bottle of wine, or what's a good bottle of wine, or something like that.
Well, he said he was inexperienced with drinking wine. Could you please recommend something?
And the waitress took it upon herself, apparently, to recommend Screaming Eagle Cabernet. Now, most of you maybe have never heard of Screaming Eagle Cabernet. It's a very small production, very famous Cabernet out of Napa Valley. And if you were to buy it retail, not restaurant markup, but retail, you pay somewhere between $1,100 and $1,500 a bottle. Yes, you heard me right, $1,100 to $1,500 a bottle. So the story is, when this gentleman asked what the price of the wine was, the waitress said $37.50. So he assumed, and one could argue whether it was a fair assumption or not, that the wine cost $37.50. So they brought the wine, they decanted the wine, and they drank the wine. The bill came, and the bill was for $3,750. Apparently, the restaurant negotiated that down to $2,200, but claims there was no mistakes made. But, you know, we see this all the time, don't we, Donna, where you know, you go into a restaurant and, you know, maybe the sommelier or the wait staff, maybe they size you up by your clothes, they size you up by your jewelry.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, you mentioned sommelier, and, you know, this story is wrong on so many levels, in my opinion. One, the waitress at a nice steakhouse, they do have sommeliers. She should have deferred to the sommelier. I think she was wrong to point out a bottle of Screaming Eagle to people who, one, said, I don't have my glasses, I can't read, I don't drink wine very often, I'm a novice. And then to say that it's $37.50 instead of being clear that it's $3,750 for a novice wine drinker. You know, the restaurant is taking no blame for it. They're saying, you know, we've reviewed the video and we don't find any error. Now, of course, they also have admitted that the video does not have audio. So what are they seeing? The waitress just standing there, you know, talking to the guy. You can't hear what anyone is saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently the host at some later time when the wine was almost empty asked how much it was and was told that it was $3,750. But at that time the bottle was open and
almost gone.
Almost gone. So what could you do? But we do see that a lot. So, you know, a good tip when you're in a restaurant is give them a price range. So, you know, gee, I'd really like a nice Cabernet.
This is what I'd like to spend.
You know, and I don't want to spend much more than $100. Right. And recognize when you go into a steakhouse, you're going to pay a premium price for that wine, a lot more than what you could pay for it, you know, at your local wine shop.
Well, I don't think people should be embarrassed to name a price. The sommeliers are very, very used to people saying that. It's very common in the world of ordering wine to be very upfront about what you'd like to pay for the wine. So it's not embarrassing to give a price range.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, some restaurants, yeah, they don't handle it as well as you would like. So moving on, there was an article in CNN on CNN's website this week of the five most romantic cities in the United States. And two of them are among Donna's and my favorites. And one is Healdsburg, where we have broadcasted any number of times, in Northern Sonoma. Jordan Winery, as you know, John's going to join us, is right outside the beautiful town of Healdsburg.
And the other town that we loved having mentioned was Fredericksburg, Texas, which is in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and the Texas wine country. And it's just about an hour's drive from our hometown of Austin. So we're very thrilled that Fredericksburg was listed. And it is a very, very quaint, cute, historic German town. And they have wine.
Well, and you're hearing Donna talking about Texas wine country, and some of you out there may be going, has she lost her mind? Well, yeah, she has, but not on this point.
Or has she drank too much Jordan wine already?
Can you really ever drink too much Jordan wine, Donna?
I think not.
But there are, for those of you that maybe don't know, there are 350 wineries now in Texas. Our son, who has helped us with our J. Cage project, who is a winemaker in Sonoma, actually got his viticulture enology degree from Texas Tech, of all places, and worked at Solaro Estate in the Texas Hill Country. But there's about 45 wineries just right in that little area, and they're beautiful. The wines are great. You want to look for grapes that grow well in Texas, like Tempranillo and Sangiovese and Viognier.
Semillon,
Tanat, and some of those. If you're looking for a great Texas Cabernet, you're probably not going to find it.
Nor a great Texas Chardonnay.
That's true. But they do some fantastic wines, just may not be the varieties that you're used to. But check it out. Another news, there's a movie that's been making the circuit of movie, you know, whatever it is, competitions and whatnot, out there, that's gotten a lot of great reviews. We were lucky enough to get a press version of it about 6 months ago, called An American Wine Story. And this is a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic movie. And what it really is about is people who have given up everything in their lives to do wine. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there like that. You know, you'll recall a few weeks ago, our guest was Alan Baker from Cartograph. And if you heard his story, you know, he left his position at PBS Radio to take a $14 an hour harvest job and never look back. But so this movie, American Wine Story, is about people who left jobs, who left secure positions and risk it all for the wine business. You know, and they interview people like, again, Alan Baker from Cartograph is in that. Dick Erath from Erath Wines. Drew Bledsoe has his own winery. But there is the story that, you know, that sort of goes, that's the central theme is about a gentleman named Jimmy Brooks. And Jimmy Brooks was sort of a bohemian wanderer, kept kind of going to college and dropping out, and finally found his way to France. And he ended up working at a French vineyard and just falling in love with wine. And he comes back to what was then a very fledgling wine industry in Oregon and became very popular amongst the other fledgling winemakers and made Pinot Noir. And his dream was to build this winery so that he would have something to pass on to his very young son at that point. But the story takes a difficult turn when one morning Jimmy gets up, it's about 3 weeks before harvest, and he goes to get a cup of coffee, and he dies of a heart attack in his kitchen at 38 years old. His sister, who is much more pragmatic, much more business-minded, comes out to the funeral, and all the winemakers are there, and they all say, we're going to make this wine for Jimmy. We're going to harvest his grapes. We're going to make the wine for Jimmy. And she finds out that Jimmy's dream was to leave the winery to his son, as you know, to leave the dream, if you will. And so the daughter takes over, or the sister rather, takes over the winery for her nephew, because she's so moved by all these winemakers that are all pitching in and helping. And so she takes over the winery, and now the young man is like a freshman or sophomore in college. And so this follows what the sister has done, and a lot of interviews with the son, and he's wise beyond his years. And it's just a fantastic film that you know, follow the story of Jimmy Brooks and his family and all these other people that just gave up everything for wine. And like I said, we're proud that our good friend Alan Baker is part of that movie.
It's a very well done video. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's about an hour and a half. You can find it now on iTunes, Google Play, and Amazon, and I think it will be on Netflix soon.
Well, I think next, if you don't mind, Raj, I would like to talk about the Huffington Post article. This is what people really think about you based on your wine order. I'm just going to start out by saying I do not agree with a lot of their opinions, but we'll see if you agree with their opinions. You order rosé no matter what time of year, and we're talking about a dry rosé. And they're saying it's classy and respectable to order rosé in the height of the summer. But if you order it in the dead of the winter, people are going to think you don't, people are going to judge you because they think you're oblivious to the seasons.
Well, I guess that's why you don't wear white shoes in December. But, you know, we talk about dry rosés a lot. One of the things that's interesting is a lot of people sit around a wine bar and they don't know that rosés are dry still, and they still think it's white Zinfandel. But rosé is, you might be judged by it, but let me tell you, it is a classic wine all year round. Try a dry Pinot Rosé with your turkey this year, especially if it's a smoked turkey, you'll be blown away. Who cares what they think?
I also think it's a really great start to any holiday gathering, be it a holiday party or the family gathering for Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's nice to start out with a, you know, maybe offer a sparkling plus a rosé to start out the,
nice festive
the day
colors.
With. Yeah, it's very festive. How do you feel about someone ordering red wine with seafood? We've always been told that's a no-no.
Well, as we've talked about on the show before, you know, that's sort of a general rule, is you don't order a red wine with seafood because the seafood may be, or the red wine will overpower the food, the seafood, and you won't taste the seafood. But I'll tell you what, a lighter red like a Sangiovese to go with a bouillabaisse or something like that is killer. And the bouillabaisse will overpower a Chardonnay. So you need to be flexible on that. You probably don't want to order a red wine with your sea bass unless you're going to stop drinking the wine, eat the sea bass, and then go back to enjoying that red wine.
Right. Well, let's speak to, here's one of my favorite ones. You order champagne even when you're not celebrating anything. People will think that you're snobbish.
That is really a pet peeve of ours. Champagne and sparkling wines are one of the great wines made. They're one of the great wines to pair with so many things. And you know what? If you're in the mood for a sparkling wine and it's going to pair well with your cheeses or that seafood we talked about, sparkling wine and oysters are fantastic, the hell with them.
I was going to say, yeah, you're asking to be judged, but you know what? Just go ahead and deal with it and get that bottle of champagne.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay, and this harkens back to how I was years ago. You only order white wine, always, without exception.
Yes.
Until I had Jordan Cabernet.
And we'll talk about that more later. Donna actually lost her Cabernet virginity, as we call it, on Jordan Cabernet, so it's close to our heart. But in any case, yeah, you know, you do see that. But, you know, I was talking to a real good friend of mine the other day, and he said, you know, I feel funny sometimes because, you know, I'm a big guy and I only order white wines, but I get headaches on red wines. And
well, I also think it gets a bad rap if you only order white wines because you only like white wines. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. No one criticizes the guy that says, I only drink Cabernets.
Well, exactly. You know? Exactly.
And, you know, it does make you a real housewife, but oh well.
All right. So we'll be back after this commercial break. And joining us will be John Jordan from the famed Jordan Chateau.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Listen for Matters of Design with celebrity designer Dimitri Christian Skourakis as he explores the dynamics of interior decorating. Imagine your personal style and ideas being shaped by our guest experts as they highlight a mixture of home furnishings, lighting, textiles, and fashion from around the world. If you've ever had difficulty trying to plan how to do it yourself, why not collaborate with a designer and wind up with results like you've never dreamed of? Matters of Design can be heard live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Bacchus and Berry Wine Radio. To reach Donna and Roger Beery or this week's guest, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Roger at BacchusandBeery.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. We are very excited to have with us John Jordan, the owner of the famed Jordan Winery. Right outside of Healdsburg on the northern end of Sonoma County. Of course, you have seen Jordan Cabernet and Jordan Chardonnay at just about every restaurant you've gone into and certainly just about any good wine store you've been into. So, John, welcome. Welcome. We appreciate you joining us.
I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about the history of Jordan Winery. You're obviously second generation, but your birthday in particular was a rather auspicious day for Jordan Winery.
Yes, it was. My parents originally bought the land on which the Jordan Winery now sits on my exact birthday, May 25th, 1972. The first harvest was 1976, and the buildings were completed in 76 and 77. And then I bought it in 2006 from my parents, and have since added on to it and grown the company a little bit, and added it with special emphasis on our visitor experience. I wanted to make the winery more accessible but in a way that's unique in Sonoma and Napa. Specifically, you know, not being Napa Disneyland, but personalized experiences with seeing a limited number of guests.
Sure, and we'll get to that in a minute. I want to stick a little bit with the background and history. Now, when your dad was out there looking for land, he obviously had an emphasis on Cabernet, and there was plenty of land available in Napa Valley, but he chose Alexander Valley. Why is that?
Well, they chose Sonoma upon the suggestion of the famed winemaker Andrei Telichev, who, as you know, was born in Russia, fought in the Russian Civil War in the early 20s, and then fled to France, where he learned enology and then came back to originally Napa and was the original winemaker at BV. And then it was his suggestion that Sonoma could, in fact, make world-class Cabernet.
Okay, and obviously that point has been proven. So your dad built the chateau, which we made our first visit to the chateau in 1983, and it's still as beautiful today as it was back then.
Well, we'd like to think perhaps even more so.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, when we made that first trip, Donna refused to drink red wine, and we traveled across Napa. We had an afternoon with you know, Charlie Wagner at Camus and all this, and Donna refused to drink red wine. And I don't know if you've heard this story or not, but I think it's kind of funny, so I want to tell it to our listeners. So our last few days were in Healdsburg. And we were with another couple that were a bit more wine experienced than we were in 1983, and they wanted to go to Jordan. So we went to Jordan, of course. Donna drank the Chardonnay, loved the Chardonnay, refused to drink the Cabernet. We got back to the bed and breakfast where we were staying, and back then that bed and breakfast had a little deal that said, you know, that they wanted people to bring in whatever their favorite wine of the day was and share it. And so my friend John, who we were traveling with, bought out the bottle of Jordan Cabernet and forced Donna to drink it. And Donna, what was your reaction to that?
Well, I agreed under duress because he was our traveling companion. I did a purse my lips as I took my first sip, but then I declared, I love this. And Roger and John, our traveling companion, raced back to the chateau to buy two more cases of Jordan Cabernet.
And as we were going up the drive, and for those of you that haven't been to Jordan, it's far back on the property. We're going to talk a lot more about this beautiful property in a bit. But you take this beautiful drive up to it. There was a little car coming down, and the young lady explained to us that they just closed. And my traveling friend said, but you don't understand, his wife just lost her Cabernet virginity on Jordan wine, and we're going to buy two more cases. To which she very politely said, I'll turn around, sir, and you can follow me back.
What? I'm sorry?
Okay. I said, so when our traveling companion announced that Donna had lost her virginity, her Cabernet virginity, the employee turned around and politely said, follow me back. We'll be happy to sell you the two more cases.
Well, I'm glad that my product was part of her losing her Cabernet virginity.
It was it. You know, you only lose it once, John.
That's right. That only comes once.
Okay. So, as I understand it, when your father ran the winery, he was very intent on estate fruit. But since you took over, you and Rob, the winemaker, sort of expanded that, haven't you?
Well, yes. I mean, winemaking is as iterative as it is empirical. And the more you do something, the more you learn. So what we did learn after the phylloxera outbreak in the early 90s, or Rob learned, because I was doing something else at the time, is that the benchlands can, in fact, make fruit that is superior for our style of Cabernet than can the Valley Four, specifically with regard to methoxypyrazine and their effect on the fruit and creating that green bean vegetable notes in the wine that we see as a flaw and something to avoid. So as a result, we have moved from the Valley Four and up into the benchlands, what we affectionately call the Côte de Jordan.
And but you still have vineyards on the property. What grapes do you get from vineyards?
We harvest some Petit Verdot, just a little bit of Malbec, a little bit of Cabernet, and just a little bit of the Merlot from our estate vineyards. I mean, I'm as much a buyer, a seller of grapes as I'm a buyer.
I see. But some of those grapes go into the Jordan Cabernet blend,
yes,
correct?
Yes, they do, and that percentage varies from year to year.
Of course. Now, you mentioned your style, and one of the things that has always impressed me about Jordan Cabernet in the restaurant setting is how accessible the wine is shortly after opening, but still it holds up and ages forever.
Well, that's one of the principal ideas behind Jordan is approachable wines that don't require extensive aging. So recall in the early 80s, and I personally cannot say that I recall in the early 80s because I was 10 years old, but then the conventional wisdom that a balanced wine had to be aged. And one of Andrei Chelyshev's precepts was that a wine does not also have to be tannic to age well, that balance is timeless, and balanced wines will age as well, if not better, than wines that emphasize tannins early on.
And why don't you tell us a bit what you mean by the term balance? Because, you know, obviously there are a lot of drinkers out there, wine drinkers, who maybe have had Cabernets, especially lower-end Cabernets, and they get hit in the face with those tannins, and they hate Cabernet.
I mean, that point could be made or to be illustrated with higher-end wines as well. If you look at, for example, the Wine Spectator score phenomenon of the 90s, where the wines that were judged to be very very good, supposedly, and I disagree with this, if you're not getting the sarcasm, is the wines that were bigger, higher alcohol, a lot over-extracted fruit bomb-type wines, the type of wine where you can stick a fork in it and the fork will either stand up or dissolve depending upon the producer. Those are prime examples of unbalanced wine.
But they're big and they get your attention. But you're right, they aren't balanced.
Well, they're big and they get their attention, but that whole phenomenon is built around wines that are the biggest wine in a tasting of 50. That's not how wine is consumed in this country. Wine is consumed, higher-end wines, over 90% of it is consumed with a meal. So when you're judging a wine, is it really right to look at the wine in the context of 49 other ones, or do you want to look at it in the context in which it'll be consumed? And that's where I take issue with the bigger wines being necessarily called better as they have been, during the bulk of the last 20 years.
Well, you bring up a really good point there. And as you know, on our blog, we do a lot of wine reviews and we do very few stand alone without food or letting the wine open. And that's to your point. But just to take this to a conversation level for a minute, I remember a couple years ago, I was having some wine with Randy Dunn. And Randy, as you know, has been a champion on Howl Mountain for lower alcohol Cabernets and more balanced Cabernets. And while he's had quite the cult following, he hasn't had the big scores because they haven't fallen into that Robert Parker lobby model that you so eloquently spoke about. And so he was telling me that one time he had a lobby at his house, and he lined up 10 Cabernets, and he had him go from lightest to heaviest, and he had him rate them. And then they took about an hour break, and they went back, and he gave him the same wines, and they went from heaviest to lightest, and the scores changed entirely.
Well, see, the whole problem with the score system is that what it seeks to do at its core is to give that which is necessarily subjective the patina of mathematical objectivity. You can't do that because the experience of wine changes with what you're eating, what you're smelling, and what wine you had before. So I'm not sure that you can rationally say that a 95-point wine is objectively 1% better than a 94. It flies in the face of reason, in my view.
Well, there was someone much wiser than me once said, anybody can tell the difference between a 95-point wine and a 75-point wine. Only the angels can tell the difference between a 95 and a 96.
Yeah. Well, you know, I certainly I don't claim to be an angel, but bigger is better in some areas, like aviation, but bigger is not always better with regard to wine.
That's, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, going back to talking about Jordan Cabernet in a restaurant setting, there are a lot of those very big Cabernets that are awesome after 3 hours of decanting. But when you come into a restaurant, you don't have 3 hours for that wine to decant. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, makes your wine so spectacular is how complex it is. It opens up beautifully over that hour to 2 hour dinner, but in 15 or 20 minutes after the bottle's open, I mean, it's in its stride.
And that's the idea is, you know, our wines are built to enhance the enjoyment of a well-made meal, not to be so big as to compete with it.
Right, right, exactly. So you live on the winery property, do you not?
Yes, I do. Since I bought the winery, I built a home there. About a mile from the winery.
And I think most of our listeners who maybe have been to the winery or seen it on the web would be surprised at what a modest home you have.
Well, you know, I'm just a simple country boy in Healdsburg. I do most of my large scale entertaining at the winery or at my home.
Yes.
My home is pretty much just for me and the dogs football watching.
There you go. And then there's a little prize bass lake right below that home, is there not?
Yes.
So tell us about your love of bass fishing.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you this. Money's not spent on wine, women, song, bass fishing, and airplanes is money wasted.
You know, that's hard to argue with. That's hard to argue with. Now, you know, when tell us a little bit about Rob and his history with the winery, because it's very unique that you would have the same winemakers since the inception of Jordan Wines.
Well, Rob, simply put, graduated from UC Davis, and he was handpicked by Andrei Chelyshev when he was consulting for Jordan. And Rob has worked for Jordan is the only job he's ever had since 1976.
And, you know, one of the things that I find interesting, I mean, Rob is just an absolutely, you know, delightful, you know, gentleman to talk to. But lately he's gotten quite a bit of press, not only for his winemaking, but for his physical fitness regime.
Yes, he has. Rob is a triathlete.
So, so tell us about the big oak fermentation tanks, because I think a lot of people that come into the winery and do the tour, they see these large fermentation tanks and they're unusual. We don't see those in a lot of wineries. And we've got about 3 minutes to the break. And when we come back, John, I want to focus on the whole Jordan experience after the break.
All right. But, well, the oak tanks are unique, singular, if you're not unique in the wine industry. Most wineries, when they make Cabernet, they barrel it, it goes right to bottling. So that is a big part of our process. It's also where we do our egg white finding with real chicken eggs, not the reconstituted kind.
Uh-huh. And so they age in here. And then when you age your wines, though, you have a very strong orientation towards French oak versus American oak.
Yes, well, American oak is obviously a very distinct set of flavors. The French oak is far more subtle, and given our house style of emphasizing fruit rather than excessive manipulation in the cellar, the subtle notes imparted by the French oak are a better fit for us.
Well, that makes sense, and again, it goes, I think, speaks to the approachability. Tell us a little bit about what a Jordan wine enthusiast can expect in vintage variation. Obviously, you and Rob work hard to have a house style, but one of the things I love is that you still bring in a great vintage variation.
Well, we emphasize consistency, and a lot of that is the result of our fruit sourcing. But as you know, each vintage is a unique creature unto itself. So there's variations with regard to the amount of time wine is spent in barrel, and the particular vendors that we use with our French oak. But we do try to always emphasize the fruit and the distinctive characteristics of each vintage without excessive manipulation in the cellar.
Sure. All right. Well, we'll be back after this commercial break with more about John Jordan, and we're going to talk about the Jordan experience, which is unlike any other in Napa or Sonoma. We'll be back in a minute.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Join Dr. Linda Iniguez every week for the Shrink Wrap Forum. This show discusses topics that you wouldn't normally hear in today's media. In the forum, virtually no topic is off limits. We invite you to join us and participate or dive into the stream where we value independent thought, talk to those people that are making a difference, and explore ideas considered outside the box. The Shrink Wrap Forum can be heard live every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Arvind Vora, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio. To reach Donna and Roger Beery or this week's guest, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to roger@bacchusandbeery.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio. We're with John Jordan, a famed Jordan winery. And we've been talking about the wine making, the grape growing, and the history of Jordan Winery. But John, I want to switch topics on you a little bit and talk about the Jordan Winery experience, because it's pretty unique. You don't have a tasting room, and I think a lot of people are surprised by that.
Well, no, we don't, and we're never going to have one. We pride ourselves in being distinctive in Napa and Sonoma for providing experiences which are limited in number of guests, reservations are required, that are highly personalized. Jordan is not a place, it's not the belly up to the wine bar where it's stacked four deep on a Saturday with people passing out in the parking lot. We make a special effort to learn about each one of our guests and to provide a highly personalized experience that really emphasizes all that is Sonoma. And in this case, I don't just mean the wine, but also to showcase our gardens and the natural bounty, which it is where we live, and the culinary skills of our very talented chefs.
Well, and Don and I, as you know, have been fortunate enough to experience some of that and done some of the events and tours there. Before we get into the tours, though, I want to go stick a little bit with the facility and talk a little bit about your olive production, your farm animals that you have there. I'm glad to see you have some Texas Longhorns, near and dear to my heart. And the gardens and your solar energy program.
Well, there's a life we like to point out, and we like to show our guests that we like to give our guests what we call the full Sonoma sensory experience. And as you mentioned, we do have an extensive chef's garden, which provides all of the fruit, vegetables, spices, and things of that nature that go into all of the bites that go into the tour and tasting food pairing, as well as dinners at the winery for my friends, customers, clients, and my other businesses, as well as my dinners at home. We also, as you know, make an estate olive oil, which we sell only at the winery, which is three different varieties of Italian olives. And we also proudly, a few years ago, a friend of mine from Texas gave me a cowboy hat. I was out on the property, and I thought, geez, I don't want to ever be accused of being all hat and no cattle, and I wanted to become the commander in beef. So now we have 34 head of cattle and growing. And we also have chickens where we can grow our own, where we have our own eggs, and occasionally some chickens that are eaten, and our own miniature donkeys, Maverick and Goose.
And I guess that that ties back to your love of aviation, Maverick and Goose.
Yes, it does. I was also a naval officer for most of my adult life.
Right. So one of the things I think is really nice is that most of that, the gardens and the part of the property where the cattle and the donkeys and the chickens are kept, for those visitors that do the tour that goes outside but stays on the property. We'll talk about the estate tour a little bit in a minute. But they do get a chance to see all that.
Yes, they do. On our estate tour, which is run from April through the first week of November, that experience is necessarily seasonal, as so much of it is outside. Many of your listeners may not have been to Sonoma, but Sonoma is a wonderful place, and it may be one of the few places in the world where literally everything grows. And we wanted to provide the estate tour was while people, if they come to Sonoma for a weekend, maybe they can't see everything, but we try to give them a little bit of slice of everything in terms of not only the wine, but the olive oil, the food, and certainly the views.
Well, if you'll indulge me for a moment, I'll take our listeners on a bit of the estate tour so they really sort of understand, because it's a really unique and special event. And Donna, chime in here with some of your favorite parts. But again, it's limited to 10 or 12
people.
You meet at the winery. You're greeted with some home
baked, well, chateau baked breakfast treats and juice and water, and then you board the bus that they have had specially built for
the Mercedes bus. Mercedes coach, and you head off into the property, and it's really spectacular. It's a 3-hour tour, and of course everyone on our bus was joking about a 3-hour tour, but the 3 hours just goes by.
It flies by,
and you take stops at various scenic points. Wines are paired with small bites. And then you go by John's Bass Fishing Lake, which is spectacular. And then at the end, you end up at the View House. Tell us a bit about that, John.
Vista.
That is, we like to call that Vista Point. And it is one of the few places in the wine country where you can actually stand in one spot and see three appellations while standing in one location. And I do not want to give it away, but it is, again, this is as much Sonoma as you can cram in one spot.
Well, it's a gorgeous view, and you get up there, and there's again food and wine pairings coming from the Jordan Kitchen, and these are not the normal food pairings that you would expect. You don't get Cabernet and a piece of steak.
No, you do not. It's a movable feast.
It is a movable feast, and one of the things I like about it, and it's not unique to the estate tour, but because Jordan only makes one Cabernet and one Chardonnay, you get to taste a number of vintages of Jordan Cabernet.
That's correct, and it varies from week to week. We like to mix it up. We like to mix up the food pairing, but there are multiple vintages of Cabernet and two vintages of Chardonnay.
Well, you know, having been on each one of the tours that you offer three different tours, it's just a fabulous experience, and I know people like to come out on vacation and be really, really spontaneous, but I would encourage our listeners to do a little planning, and if you're taking a trip to Sonoma, get a reservation at Jordan for anything they offer. It's always very well done and very enjoyable.
You know, and sometimes it's nice to get pampered, and you definitely get pampered at Jordan.
Oh, indeed.
So, tell us a little bit about your solar project, John.
Well, a few years ago, we decided to become fully independent from an energy production point of view for not only the winery complex, but my home and all of the other facilities on the property. So we built a very large solar array, which pretty much consumes the entire half of a very large hill.
Spectacular. And so you now add more energy to the grid than you take out. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we produce slightly more than we consume.
Yeah. So tell us about the two other tasting opportunities that people have other than the estate tour.
Well, there's the standard, the following are available year-round. There is the library tasting, which is done twice a day, and that is emphasizing just literally tasting two or three vintages of Cabernet and one vintage of Chardonnay, along with small bites in our library and cellar room. And our tour and tasting is the same as the tasting, but with an extensive tour of the winemaking facility.
Okay. And I understand that this year you're going to be offering some new experiences, a Valentine's dinner for the first time?
Well, yes, we do our Valentine's dinner. We really enjoyed that last year, and so this year I think we're going to do it twice.
Okay. And a sunset supper? What's that about?
And the sunset suppers we do up at Vista Point, which is the culmination of the estate tour experience. But this year, last year we did this, and it was well received. So this year, in 2015, we'll be doing it again, and that is a 50 to 60 person dinner outside in the vineyards on top of the hill.
Fantastic. Anything else new for 2015?
I think that about covers it. We have our Spring at Jordan event and our Christmas at Jordan event.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about, most of our guests have their wineries all have wine clubs. But you take a different approach, and you have a rewards club. Tell us about that.
Well, what we do is we enjoy sharing the Jordan Winery experience with our customers. So we do not have a wine club where there's a minimum purchase or you cough up a credit card number, and then they send you whatever they want to send you. In Jordan, whatever you want to buy is whatever you want to buy, and the more you buy, you qualify for discounts or you can redeem them entirely for experiences at the estate, like overnights or tickets to our tour and tasting or various parties throughout the year.
Well, in the overnights, you've got a number of guest rooms at the Chateau that are just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, we take great pride in our hospitality.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the nice things about it, too, I think, is the ability to order. I'm really into the 2006 and the 2002, and one of the things that has surprised me pleasantly is that those wines are not significantly marked up over their original pricing or the pricing of the current vintage.
No, we like to deliver a wonderful product at a wonderful price. We're in this for the long haul, and I don't have to please other shareholders.
Well, it's... it's true that you've been in it. You have been in it for the long haul, and you will be in it for the long haul. And, you know, again, I want to reiterate Donna's point is that, you know, it's really easy, guys, to go to wine country and say, hey, we'll just hang out and go where we want to go. But if you plan a little bit, you have the opportunity to make appointments at places like Jordan and at some of the smaller producers that we've talked about here on the show, you know, and really, really create a unique experience for yourself. And the experience at Jordan is like none other. So, John, I want to take a minute to thank you for taking the time out of your day. John is busy today. He is not at the winery. He's in Portland, Oregon. So thank you for taking the time out of your very busy day to join us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much, Roger.
The pleasure is absolutely ours. Please join us next week on Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio. And until next week, Donna?
Until our next glass of wine.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us this week for Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio. Roger and Donna Beery will be back again next Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope your weekend gets started with a beautiful glass of wine.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.